Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Thursday, July 2nd. We've got 56 degrees here in Old Town Park City on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, Erica Martin. Good morning.
Good morning. Temperatures for today are going to climb into the upper 70s. 79 is your expected high temperature. Lows in the 50s. I'd say 50 is your expected overnight low for Friday, 81 degrees. So we are trending warmer. We like that. And just in time for the Independence Day weekend celebration, the high of 84 degrees. Now, the only issue I would say is that it looks like we will see some strong winds this afternoon and some strong winds tomorrow. It'll be a little breezy, but I just want you to keep in mind that we do have very dry conditions for any fire weather. So if you see something, please call authorities very quickly. On Sunday, still seeing plenty of sunshine and keeping it in the 80s at 84 degrees, 85 on Monday. And then we dip a little bit back into the low 80s, 83 on Tuesday and 80 on Wednesday. So I think this is a great stretch of weather. We definitely have a lot of outdoor activity weather for the next couple of days. Just one of the things I always kind of mention is beware of fireworks and just be mindful of your surroundings and just that right now we do have a lot of dry fuel, stronger winds, and conditions can certainly be hazardous as far as fire weather goes. Apart from that, just enjoy this lovely stretch of weather.
Okay, will do. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
KPCW News Time, 8:07. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Semi-County Councilmember Kim Carson with a recap of yesterday's meeting. President and CEO of Ski Utah, Nathan Rafferty, with details on the 2019-20 ski season, Utah's fourth best ever despite the early closure due to the pandemic. And Blair Fulner, founder of KPCW, talks about how the station started 40 years ago. And KPCW General Manager Renee Bodley talking a little bit about where the future is headed. And stay tuned. Coming up on Cool Science Radio this morning, right after the local news hour, a previously broadcast show. Today's guests include Brian Dumain, an award-winning journalist and a contributing editor at Fortune magazine, talking about his new book, Bezonomics, How Amazon is Changing Our Lives and What the World's Best Companies Are Learning From It. A fascinating look at Jeff Bezos and the company he built, which is disrupting the business world, the physical retail landscape, and nearly all of consumer behavior. Then Matthew Cobb, he's written The Idea of the Brain, The Past and Future of Neuroscience. For thousands of years, philosophers and scientists have tried to understand what the brain with its 86 billion neurons connected in infinite ways does. Despite the astonishing discoveries of science, we still have only the vaguest idea of how our brains work. Again, all of that coming up on today's show, Cool Science Radio. It's 8:10 now. Good morning. Well, the Summit County Council yesterday voted unanimously to approve some amendments for the county's mandatory mask order. KPCW's Rick Bruff reports that among the changes, the order calls for children to wear face coverings. Summit County Health Director Rich Bola said their bottom line goal is to keep businesses open and let citizens carry on some semblance of normal life, albeit with a mask.
Health Director Bola and County Manager Tom Fisher both said that since the mask order was approved last Friday, they've seen a good level of compliance with the mandate. Bola said they felt that they had to react to the worrisome trends that are occurring around Summit County.
The intent of the order was really preemptive. We're surrounded by communities that have surging cases. In Summit County, our cases still look fairly good, but importantly, at the time that we issued this order, there were several key indicators that were going the wrong direction. And those included the R-naught, which again is the estimated number of individuals that contract the disease from a single infected individual. New cases, we had day over day increases in cases. I think very importantly, we had a significant increase from 0% to 13% and then to 15% of our cases coming from travel-related cases.
He said the travel cases include visitors who bring in the infection or locals who have traveled outside the county and come back infected. Deputy County Attorney Dave Thomas said that among the changes to the mask order, they will clarify that face shields can be worn by residents in addition to face coverings. The order says that children between the ages of 2 and 10 should wear masks with the assistance and supervision of adults when they are indoors or in public spaces. Thomas said youngsters don't have to wear the masks during sleep periods in school or in daycare. The order would also say that someone doesn't have to wear a mask if they are the only person at their place of work. The order also notes that appeals can be made to the Board of Health. Thomas detailed what an appellant has to do.
You have to show the Board of Health and the Health Department, if you're not going to wear face coverings or face shields, you have to show them what other effective mitigation you're going to do in place of that. You have to convince the Health Department and the Board of Health that, in fact, that mitigation would be, in the end, just as effective as a face covering or face shield. So that's one area you could appeal. The second is a circumstance where you would have to show that on balance, the overall health risks associated with wearing the face covering is going to be greater than not wearing the face covering, considering the activity that you're doing.
The amended order took effect as of midnight on Wednesday. County Council Chairman Doug Clyde said he's been hearing residents with concerns about the order for the past week.
They felt it was an infringement on their constitutional rights. And of course, you know, we are a nation that was founded on a high degree of personal responsibility and personal rights, not the least of which is the right to express yourself, which many of our constituents did very well over the last week. But it is the nature of government to curtail those rights when it is essential for the purpose of maintaining health, safety, and welfare.
Plaid said that government has the right and the responsibility to act because of a major crisis affecting not only public health, but the economy.
People out there should realize that masks are essentially the last item in the bag. We're at the bottom of the sack right now when it comes to items that we can implement that are going to improve public health safety and still try and open our economy.
And Glenn Wright said the bottom line is you need to wear a mask to respect your fellow man.
Someone who walks into an establishment and blatantly violates this order without a mask is essentially giving the single finger salute to the people in that building. I don't have a whole lot of respect for that person.
County Council Member Glenn Wright for KPCW. I'm Rick Bruff.
8:16 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. The Summit County Council met yesterday and, as we heard, discussed some amendments to the mandatory mask wearing. On the phone with a recap of some of the other items they discussed, I have Council Member Kim Carson. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Leslie.
Again, the major item, the council passing some amendments to the mandatory mask order. One change is that you are calling now for masks for children between 2 years and 10 years old. How come?
It was 2 to 12 years old. And they had actually been included, but that was a clarifying segment on there. Because that's what, from reading all the research, it's recommended that children over 2 wear a mask. And we haven't seen the number of hospitalizations in younger children. However, they do serve as vectors, and they can carry the disease and bring it back to family members that may be at higher risk.
Sure. So some pushback from some is that this is just a health order, not the law. Can you explain to us the difference between an order and an ordinance or statute or law?
A health order is law. I don't know how else to explain it, but it is law.
All right.
It's enforceable by our sheriff's department and other local police forces that may be in the county. There's one in Camas, and then, of course, Park City Police Department. However, we are not approaching this from a punishment standpoint. We want to use it for education opportunities, and most people are being very cooperative. And I think just since last Saturday, the number of people wearing masks has just gone up exponentially.
So there are some appeals being filed to the order, which will go to the Board of Health, and they're setting, sounds like, some criteria here for health clubs and yoga studios. As a member of the Board of Health, any other kind of businesses appealing this?
Not that I'm aware of right now. I know there's been some concerns with some of our daycare providers, and we really want to be able to work with them if they want to appeal or have an idea of what could work better for them. One thing we did add is shields as a type of covering, and those have been used in daycare settings and for younger children. You can see their face and they can see yours if you're wearing the shields, see the expressions on people's faces, and you can see the expressions on children's faces, which, you know, is an important part of to gauge their development and their moods.
Yeah. And there was some specific discussion yesterday about health clubs and whether or not people can do strenuous exercise with masks on. Will they be required to, or does this you have to hear the appeal first?
We have to hear the appeal first, but we're definitely open to hearing suggestions. We want to make sure that if they're not requiring masks, that they have other protections in place, such as the physical distancing and other things that may help protect those that are exercising there.
Mm-hmm. And I haven't heard the audio, but I know that one citizen had made some extensive, interesting comments that he thinks that the county is going in the wrong direction and is too strict, although he's not opposed to masks. But I mean, basically, it was similar to the argument that why don't you do everything you can to protect the vulnerable population and those above, you know, 60 and 65, and let the rest of the population get back to normal life and let the virus cases run through the population, which we have to do anyway.
You know, for the most part, I believe that's what we've done. In the initial stages, we did shut things down, and I think that we were very successful in slowing the spread of the disease, and we now have decent numbers. We are seeing an increase. We're up to 498 cases, and we have had a growth increase over the last three consecutive days. So that's a little discouraging, but, you know, their numbers aren't anywhere close to what they were during our initial outbreak. Our R-naught is now up to 1.25, which that basically is a number for indicating the rate of spread. And we'd like for that to be under one for quite a while. In May, we had it down, you know, even as low as 0.2 for a while. It would kind of fluctuate between 0.2 and 0.7 in there. And we're seeing more travel-related cases again. Those had been really non-existent in late May, but as people have started to get out and travel more, they're bringing some cases home with them. And so that's at about 7% right now, but has been as high as 15% in the last week or so. So we'll watch that closely. But I think what we've done has been successful, and we've been very strategic in trying to open up as soon as we felt like the numbers indicated it was safe to do so. Right now, we have high case rates all around us. The last week, there's been a 15% increase in cases statewide. Counties on both sides of us are seeing significant increases. So we want our businesses to stay open. And we think the masks, wearing the face coverings, is one way that we can help keep the virus in check.
All right.
And it's such a simple thing. And I don't feel like that is infringing on someone's personal rights. I mean, it's something you do to protect your family, to protect your neighbors. And people say, well, those at risk should be the ones to stay home and just protect themselves. But yet, if others are coming and going from their home, you don't know what, you know, everybody can't completely isolate themselves. And they also need to obtain basic services like food, and they may need to go to the doctor's office, and, you know, so they can wear a mask, but they're not really protected unless everyone else is wearing a mask too. So as far as I'm concerned, it's a very simple solution. And is it 100% effective? No, but it has been shown to be very effective.
Do you agree with your fellow council members that the mask order is necessary, not just for our health, but in order to save the economy this winter?
Yes, I think we'll have to wait to see this. I think everything we can do right now to keep the virus in check is helping us move forward. I think people, if they know it's a safe environment when they come here, even during the summer, they're going to feel safer coming here. I know personally, if I know everybody else, you know, when I go shopping at Kimball Junction or Main Street, if I know everyone else will be wearing masks, I'm going to be a lot more likely to go and shop there, knowing that I'm in a safer environment.
Council members seem to be struck by the changes that the Sundance Festival is making for 2021. And of course, there were suspicions that the 2020 Fest was kind of the early petri dish for COVID-19. So is Sundance really a kind of a sign of things to come?
You know, it's hard to say. I think for this next few months and even going out a year or more until we have a vaccine, we're going to see all things occurring differently. And it may lead to permanent changes that they find there's benefits within some of those changes. We'll just have to wait and see. We haven't been briefed by Sundance at this point, so I don't really want to comment on their specific plan, as I'm not clear on what it is.
All right. Let's see. Other items on the agenda. They're rural county grants that could help economic development. What's the potential here, Kim? I mean, is this another attempt to get economic diversity?
So you're talking about the rural county grant program?
Available from...
So that came out of SB 95, mm-hmm. and there have been several different rural economic development programs. It was kind of a hodgepodge. And what they did, because things were so scattered and people really weren't sure, both businesses and counties, of just what was available and who was able to apply for different pots, they simplified it in that they just created one larger program, but it's more flexible in its use. So we'll be looking at creating a county economic development advisory board. That'll be our first step. And, you know, I do hope that this can be used to help improve access to funding for some of our minority populations and just really diversifying the economy as a whole. We've seen the impact this year like we've never seen before of kind of having all our eggs in one basket.
Yeah, the county's tried this before, of course, with the industrial park back in the 80s and the tech park in 2008. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, do you think this new effort's going to work?
Well, I definitely think it's worth continuing to try. We can always look at new things. I just look forward to having the Economic Advisory Board created and have them bring ideas to us. I think housing is a huge issue up here. I think a lot of businesses are hesitant to move in because they're not sure where their employees would live. So I think that's something that we need to have a discussion on.
All right. Let's see. The auditor also presented the certified tax rates. There was some discussion that property valuation has gone up for the county and other taxing entities. Are we talking about property values before the pandemic hit?
Yes, but we haven't so far seen a big indication that there's a large decline. We just don't think we'll probably see as large of an increase this year. But again, we'll have to wait and see as the next few months progress.
And any indication what this means for our property tax bills?
Well, the rate actually floated down because as the total assessed valuation goes up, we're not permitted to capture anything but the amount for brand new growth. And that's, you know, on new construction. So that rate floated down. So people should see, unless they had a reassessment of their properties, which occurs about every 5 years, they most likely will not see any significant change on their tax bill.
Okay. Real quick, the council talked about a show called The County Seat, which plays on Sunday mornings on Channel 4. So the county has to pay to be a part of this show?
Yes, they are an independent organization. However, they work closely with the Utah Association of Counties, and we have participated in a number of shows over the past few years. I think 2 years ago was the first year we ever actually paid for specific segments highlighting Summit County, and this was done in conjunction with the Chamber Bureau. And we also had the opportunity to talk about issues that we felt were very important for Summit County, like wildfire risk was one of them. And so they have occasionally, you know, approached us, particularly when we're down at the legislature during the session, and asked us to participate, you know, would you like to be part of this panel discussion? And so this past year that happened, and we really weren't aware that they were adding another segment to our costs. So we haven't agreed to pay for those. However, we feel like the ones that we have done have been useful But we'll evaluate it again going forward. Again, this year with our current budget concerns, we're not going to be too likely to spend any additional money on things that are nice to have.
At first, I just want to get your reaction to the primary election. I believe that you endorsed Melina Stevens, so you're feeling pretty good about the outcome?
I am. I think we're very fortunate in Summit County that we had two highly qualified candidates. I really appreciate all the work Candace Hart has done within the community on a volunteer basis, and also, of course, his work on the Siderville Basin Planning Commission. And so I'm sure he'll continue to be a contributing member in our community. And I really think Melina will do an excellent job. I think she has a skill set that will complement the other skill sets that we currently have on the council and just bring a different perspective.
Okay.
And of course, we do need to wait for the final outcome.
Sure. Yep. Okay. Yeah. Anything else you want to mention? I know you've got a coffee with council today happening 12:30 to 2. Anything else?
I do want to mention the passing of Sheldon Richens. I know you mentioned it earlier on the radio, but he was a longtime Summit County resident, an educator, and of course, county commissioner during the 90s primarily. And so we're very sorry to hear of his passing, and our condolences go out to his family.
Okay. Kim Carson, appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:32. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, as we reported last week, Ski Utah announced that despite losing the last couple of months of winter due to COVID-19, the 2019-20 ski season in Utah was still the fourth best season on record for skier visits. On the phone to talk a little bit more about that, I have Ski Utah President and CEO Nathan Rafferty. Good morning, Nathan.
Morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. So skiing and snowboarding came to an abrupt end in mid-March when the resorts in the state began closing. No one was happy about it, but of course, the right thing to do, no?
Absolutely. You know, I'm really proud of our resorts to make that difficult decision. I mean, it was one of, if not the busiest check-in weekends or days of the year, and you had people who had come from all around the country, all over the world, ready for spring break with their family. And, you know, it was, you know, no question, and especially in hindsight, the right thing to do, but really unprecedented to just shut things down really overnight in a matter of hours.
Yeah. So you estimate that the industry lost more than $230 million based on what?
Well, we do research every year and have a pretty good understanding of what people spend, and we went back to the folks that do that research for us, and they just did the kind of simple math on, well, you have so many days left in the ski season, and this is how much people spend, and really that was the that was the meat of our ski season too. Those families that come in from out of town and spend more than $300 a day per person, and they really do a lot for our local economy. And, that being said, sure could have been a whole lot worse had this whole thing come down in November or December. While we took that big loss, we're feeling, a little bit better about it when it happened.
Yeah. So had we continued for that month, March through April, would it have tracked to be the best skier visit year ever?
Very likely. We it's amazing that we're saying that coming off that huge year that we had the year before, and a couple things have to line up for that to happen. Great snow, not only a lot of snow, but timely snow, so it has to happen early in the ski season, and then we've got to have a great economy. And we had all those things going with this last ski season. It seems like the snow turned off a little bit in the middle of the season last year. So, I don't know if we would have those. We certainly didn't have those big powder days in end of March and April. But we were on track for at least equaling that great season from the year before. And I bet the spending number would have been all-time, tops.
Yeah. So what are you hearing from the resorts? We had heard from Park City Chamber Bureau CEO Bill Malone that he's anticipating a 40% decline in terms of the Christmas season. Any guesses from Ski Utah?
You know, I hesitate to even guess. There's so much uncertainty. What I will tell you is that we're really optimistic that we're going to have a ski season and lists are going to be turning and people are going to be skiing. But, you know, any of us that are running businesses are kind of budgeting very conservatively. I'd love to think that we're going to be in better shape than what we think we might. But we've got to be able to plan and kind of understand that things are going to be really different next year.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about what some of those changes that we should expect to see? I mean, the maze lines are, I'm guessing, the most critical.
Yeah, you know, I really don't have any of that information. You know, the upside is, if there is one, is that, you know, when this happened, gave us a ton of time to really think about how things are going to change. And, you know, we've seen everything open from golf courses to movie theaters to bowling alleys and have been able to learn a ton. We've also been able to see what's happening down in the southern hemisphere as they open and operate for a ski season. So I couldn't even tell you exactly what might happen. You know, ironically, the skiing part is the easy part, right? We're outside and mostly masked up and goggles and distanced. Where it gets trickier is when people move inside and cold and windy and snowy days and people want to be inside in the lodge. But that being said, you know, food service has, you know, been able to operate now for quite some time and they're refining those practices. So I'm confident that the skiers are going to come up with a good solution, and I'm optimistic that we're going to move forward, but there's no question it's going to be a little bit different. But I can tell you right now that there's nobody that wants to be more, you know, open more than the ski areas.
Yeah. And of course, we know that the Epic and the Icon passes are on sale, and the companies are offering additional insurance for free, have extended the deadlines for potential skiers. What about the other resorts that may not be tied to one of these passes? Are they going ahead and selling season passes?
Yeah, everybody's selling them. They're pretty consistently across the board some kind of reassurance program that either gives you a date where you can say, hey, I'm not feeling good about next year, and get your money back or roll it over to next year. And I don't know anybody that doesn't have some sort of reassurance program. You know, one silver lining that's potentially going to come out of this is some of the technology improvements that we see at some of the ski areas with online purchases and contactless payments. So, you know, they're scrambling to try to make more of that happen, which I think is something that will stick around and be a benefit to skiers and riders moving forward.
I believe it was you who was sitting in on the webinar yesterday with the National Ski Areas Association. Basically, they were talking about the impacts of the not issuing J-1 visas through at least through the end of the year. What kind of hit will that have on the ski industry? At least what was your takeaway?
You know, that's a big deal. You know, that is not great policy for our industry, but the ski industry isn't alone in that, right? So there's hotels and resorts and theme parks, and, you know, we're all kind of in the same boat in that one. And I think talking to some folks afterwards, and so these are either J-1 or H-2B visas where resorts rely heavily, as you know, on you know, it's such a unique industry where you have to staff up from, you know, maybe a couple hundred employees to several thousand employees in a matter of weeks or months, and have those for 4 or 5 months and then ramp down again. So we get great help from programs where we bring mostly students, J-1 visas, really sharp kids from all over the world that come and work at our ski areas, and it's really built as a cultural exchange, but they get to come see and understand a new culture and provide a great service for our ski areas. And, you know, the current administration didn't see that as a benefit necessarily, so we're going to have to work hard. It sounds like we have some time, and we may be able to make some reparations on that. But there's another question as to whether those students or those kids want to travel to the U.S. You know, late next year, and even if that rule, if we got that fixed, would they be available and wanting to come back. So, you know, that is going to be a challenge for us next year industry-wide, I think.
Yeah, and I think the concern from the administration is that due to the high unemployment numbers, that these visa holders could be taking away jobs from Americans.
Sure, but we know that's not the case here in Park City. You know, I mean, we'd love to give those jobs to Americans. And, you know, you look at the job boards at any of our big resorts in the state, and there are always openings, you know. And so we need all the help we can get. And these are jobs that help keep our community and support our community and keep this big engine, the resort engine, open. So, you know, it just made a tough job even tougher is what it did.
Okay. Sounds like some kind of lobbying effort is happening.
Yeah, so we work closely with NSA, the National Ski Areas Association, and they've just got a fantastic team that is really in touch with Washington, D.C., and what they do is reach out to state associations like Ski Utah and say, hey, here's what we need help on, and will you contact your legislators? And then we'll go to people like Representative Stewart and Representative Bishop, who both have ties into immigration issues in D.C., and, you know, we'll leverage our relationships with those guys. And I got to say, they've all been fantastic, and we're really lucky that we have good relationships with our representation in D.C. across the board, both senators and our representatives, and they've been really helpful through pandemic on a whole host of issues. So we're optimistic that we can hopefully see some change before ski season happens, and that, especially the immigration issue, you know, there's a review period after 30 days and then every 60 days after that. So we're optimistic that we can see some changes there.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention, Nathan?
No, just enjoying summer and getting excited for ski season. It's going to come faster than we know it, and we're looking forward to it.
All right. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you.
Nathan Rafferty is president and CEO of Ski Utah. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW News Time 843. We've got 59 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Again, looking for plenty of sun today, a high of 78. Clear tonight, 52. Expecting to see some breezy conditions later this afternoon. Sunshine and 81 for Friday for Independence Day. Looking for sunny and a high of about 84 through Sunday and Monday. Well, KPCW, the station that Park City built, signed on the air 40 years ago today. The person responsible for making that happen is Blair Fulmer. She joins me now on the phone. I also have in the studio with me KPCW General Manager Renee Bodley. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Hi, Blair. Hey, so let's take a look back, Blair. It's 1978. As a ski resort, Park City certainly wasn't Sun Valley. It wasn't Aspen. At that point, why did you think KPCW needed a radio station?
Well, I mean, the town, as you mentioned, was a mess, you couldn't hear any of the radio stations out of Salt Lake, because at that time there were no translators, and the mountains blocked signals coming into town. So, I was kind of on a break from working at stations in Salt Lake, along with four other people, Dan Wilcox and Tom Bach and Jay Meehan and Rebecca Weidenhouse. And we were just thinking that, hey, you know, we've all been working in radio stations all over the place, especially Salt Lake. Here's a place where you really need some form of mass communication, because, you know, the newspapers hit your doorstep on Thursday, and that's the only local news for another 6 days. So yeah. the feeling was there was really a need, and the notion that I had was that it needed to be not your regular news, not what you were hearing on commercial stations. It needed to be something better, something more connected, something more along the line of the newspaper reports. I'd been covering Summit County News for the Salt Lake Tribune for 5 years before that. And I was looking for a hybrid between newsprint and radio, and And I think it was just really fun to invent it.
Yeah.
Make it happen.
Certainly your passion was news, but why did you think that the people living in Park City at the time, basically hippies, ski bums, and old miners, who you needed to financially support the station, were going to feel the same way?
Because I talked to all of them. I mean, as you recall, the town was, there was maybe 1,000 adults. And we all knew each other. We all hung out in the same places. We all spent Friday and Saturday night at the Down Under. And when I would bring it up with people, they'd say, wow, that would be really cool. And just talking to people over and over again, especially then Mayor Jack Green, who was the postmaster in town at that time, and a person who actually wanted to be a journalist and went to UCLA after World War II, but he had to come back and help his family. The mayor told me, you know, this is what the town needs. We need something where we can all get together every day. We can talk to each other. The weekly newspapers were doing a great job, but, you know, we just had to make it happen. To do something more than that, and yeah, the fundraising piece of it was just difficult. I mean, the piece of it was the most important piece of it was that I felt that the need was so great for the town to have a daily source of mass communication. I thought that everybody in town would listen and everybody in town would give. And that was that's a model for public radio that nobody else in the country was doing then. And they're still not doing now. So I thought the news was the compelling piece of it. And then later, Susan invented a whole different way of fundraising for public radio that, is still successful. You guys are still using it today. It's amazing.
We'll get her on in just a few more minutes. But back in the day, I mean, I'm thinking it was probably more like, you know, it was putting out the fires every day. But what were you thinking? I mean, the long term, I mean, was it a radio station that was going to make it to the next real estate recession? Or did you really feel at that time that it had the staying power of, you know, 40 plus years?
Yeah, well, that's an amazing question. I never thought about the long term that way. I thought that, I mean, the first few years were really touch and go. It was a good fundraiser for us was a few thousand bucks, and we were in a real estate recession at that time, and we went through this is way before snowmaking. We went through several periods where I wasn't sure whether or not the station was going to make it. And it wasn't until Susan came on board and took charge of the fundraising in 1982 that there was some light there at the end of the tunnel. And in the next couple of years, everything came together. And by about 1985, that's when I started thinking, hey, this thing is really going to work.
Yeah, I want to ask you about some of your favorite memories of the station. I mean, anything jump to the front of your mind there? Any favorite news stories?
Well, that's a hard one, Leslie, because as you know, back then, everybody drank to excess and smoked to excess. And some of those memories, I think, are lost in the fog of 40 years. But I think the fundraisers were the feel good pieces for me. And we'll talk to Susan here in a second. But it was the fundraisers. I felt like were a verification of the dream. It was like I felt like everybody was voting during those fundraisers with their wallets and saying, yeah, this thing works, we want it. And so twice a year, it seemed to me that fundraisers were just a big part of how it felt to me. And as the fundraisers got bigger and bigger and bigger, it just felt like, wow, this thing is really going to work. And so in terms of memories, it's just, I think it was the end of every fundraiser when Susan had the room full of volunteers and everybody was celebrating. I think those are my fondest memories.
Yeah. Well, let's put Susan on for just a minute here and get her take on those fundraisers. Susan, are you with me?
Okay. I'm gonna hand her the phone here in a second. But I just wanted to say that for me, the cool thing about this 40 years is that you and Rick and Emily and everybody at the station is, and you especially, Leslie, have kept the flame. The local news piece of it has been the whole thing that made this work for this town, and it's so amazing that it's lasted this long. And just a big thank you from me to you guys and to boards, lots of boards, and Bob Richer and everybody else that has really made this thing happen and stay happening and staying true to what I set out to do. I'll put Susan on right now.
She's okay, because I've got another question for you after this.
Hey, Leslie, happy birthday.
Yeah, good morning, Susan. Well, Blair was talking about how he felt like the fundraisers were really kind of affirmation of, you know, doing the right thing. But I went through many of those with you. It didn't feel that way until, I guess, the very end. So,
you know, it's hard to sit there and ask for people's money, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, what does the station mean to you? I mean, and again, for you, the one that, you know, had to make sure that the underwriting was sold and that the pledge drives were successful. I mean, it was like you had a lot of people depending on you to make that happen.
And believe me, I felt that responsibility.
And I'm bringing it back up, right? Those, just that tension.
No, you know, for me, Leslie, a good part of that was the joy of making sure something I really believed in, our local news on KPCW, happened and kept happening. And I think when you're that attached to your goal, and your goal is such a good one, that your work is a pleasure.
Yeah. And it was done so much with volunteers. I mean, you just had a cadre of people just willing to make it happen.
You know, my background had been in volunteerism in various ways, and I knew the value and the ability of volunteers to really make things happen. And I went way out of my way to make sure we had lots of them, especially during those fundraising times. Sitting there, cheering us on, working hard. All those volunteers worked so hard to make sure KPCW was a success.
Yeah. And I asked Blair. I was just going to say, I mean, I'd ask Blair what her favorite memory of the station was. Do you have one?
You know, I think all those hours and days and weeks and months of getting ready for a fundraiser were necessary. But it's when it kicked off and people started coming in, people started calling, and you could feel how much the town really depended on KPCW and really depended on that news. That for me, too, that was a wonderful affirmation of what we were all doing. You were doing it, too. And I know it was hard for you to be on the air and raise money, and you did it. You had such courage.
Well, thank you. Put Blair back on one more time. And again, thank you, Susan, for, again, you know, making it happen for all of those years.
Well, thank you for keeping it alive and keeping it beautiful. Here's Blair.
Blair, I just have another minute here with you. But maybe if you could just summarize, I mean, what is the station's legacy here?
The legacy is that KPCW came along at just the right time for the town to be inventing itself. It was a crashed old mining camp, and all of a sudden it was reinventing itself into a world-class ski area, and the radio station became a part of that. As you know, that we used to do lots and lots of issues, surveys, and town hall meetings. One of my favorite was, do we want to be another Aspen? And we invited Bill Sterling, mayor of Aspen, to town for a town meeting. And we had 500 people show up for that forum. So I think the radio station was a huge part of the creation of the new Park City. Yeah. So that's what I think is really special about what the station did.
I listened into a portion of your rotary presentation last week, and it sounds like this was part of just of a book you're writing. Is that, when is that book coming out?
It depends on how much fun Susan and I have.
Okay.
But I'm shooting for sometime in the next year and a half.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to it. And again, I know, along with myself, I know there are many, many others still here in town that appreciate the hard work that you two did to make the station that Park City built. So thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
That's the founder of KPCW, Blair Fulner, along with her wife, Susan Fulner. Also in the studio with me, I've got Renee Bodley, who serves as our general manager for KPCW now, and maybe just a kind of a hint of things to come here. I mean, 40 years later and going strong.
Thanks, Leslie. Yeah, what an honor to continue the tradition that Blair and Susan started, and a big tip of the hat to them. How lucky is this community to have Blair and Susan to think about starting a radio station like this? Blair mentioned Bob Richer. I want to give him a shout out. He's the chairman of our board of trustees. Bob Richer has been at the helm for the last 9 years and has overseen a lot of changes. He instituted the Broadcasters Club. He helped us get this new expansion going. His vision and assistance has been invaluable. I don't know how you can thank Bob Richer enough. The Board of Trustees has been amazing. The Broadcasters Club, which started in 2014, I'd like to give a big shout out to that group. And more recently, Leslie, the people who have donated to our capital campaign who have helped us build this radio station. So here's where we're going. We're more than a radio station these days. We have a really big digital footprint that has grown tremendously in the past 3 years alone. Here are some numbers. In 2017, we had 119,000 users on kpcw.org. And Leslie, in 2018, you started putting all of our news stories on that website. In 2018, we went up to 251,000 users. 2019, 433,000 users. And then just this year alone, in the first 6 months, 500,000 users with more than 1 million page views on kpcw.org. What we are hearing is, as this community grows, as we get more and more people who live here part-time, they go back to their other home and they stay in touch with the Park City community by streaming this radio station online or on the mobile app. The mobile app is another new way that people are listening, and smart speakers. And in just the 2 years alone, we have seen an explosion of the number of people who are listening to us that way. So, Leslie, there are a lot of people right now who are listening to this show on a hike or a bike ride, and they take Leslie Thatcher with them wherever they go from 8 to 9 in the morning, and that's a huge success. We are trying to raise $40,000 in honor of our 40th birthday. We have about $4,000 left to go. We're sitting at about $36,000. So if anyone's listening and you appreciate what KPCW has been doing for the community, please go to kpcw.org and click the donate button.
Okay, and I'm going to bump over NPR because we do have some breaking news here. The Summit County Sheriff's Office and SAR teams are looking for a lost boy. He's been identified as 9-year-old Stratton Joshua Wright of Idaho. He was hiking with family members west of Bear Lake in the Henry's Fork drainage area. He became separated last night about 8 p.m. from his group. He was last seen walking north from that area. They believe that he was wearing a light blue long sleeve shirt or hoodie, jeans, and Under Armour shoes. If anyone has any information or believe that they have seen the young boy, please contact the Summit County Sheriff's Office or 911. At this point, they are not asking for volunteer searchers. You're listening to listener-supported community radio, KPCW, celebrating 40 years today. It's time for news.